Good morning. Welcome. I'm Sandy. I'm on the board of Cedars, and welcome each and every one of you here today. I'm glad you're here. And I've got a few announcements after the service. We always have coffee and food and conversation. And next week, there's a congregational meeting, so we need a quorum. So please come for that. And this Wednesday is the meditation group at 5:30 at Cedar Center. And if you need more information, you can ask me. And there's a Suquamish Community Kitchen from 4 to 7 on the same day. And you can ask Rod or Mike about that. And there's also Super Sunday Supper is the last Tuesday. And I believe you talked to Mike and Rod for that as well. And then there's a Climate Cafe February 1st. Here from 9 to 11, if you want to just process what's going on with climate change, you're welcome for that. And now I invite you all to stand up and greet your neighbors. All right, I'd like to introduce our minister for today. Bruce Bodie is Minister Emeritus at the Quimper Unitarian Universalist Fellowship in Port Townsend, Washington, from which he retired in 2018. As a senior minister after serving the congregation for 14 years, from 2004 to 2018. Before coming to Port Townsend, Reverend Bodie was the interim minister of the First Unitarian Universalist Church of Houston, Texas, 2002-2004, and the Hope Unitarian Church in Tulsa, Oklahoma. Prior to that, he served for 22 years, 1978 to 2001, as an associate minister at the Fountain Street Church in Grand Rapids, Michigan, a large, independent, religiously liberal congregation.
And greetings to all of you. This is somewhat less eventful than the last time I was here. Some of you may remember we got a flat tire on the way, so I came in a bit harried at that time. Jeff, fortunately, was just a couple miles away and gave us a ride in while my wife stayed with the car. But she's here also today. You may even see a little bit more of her later on in the service. Surprise. All right, okay. So the month of January is named after the Roman deity Janus. Janus is the god of endings, beginnings, gates, transitions, time, duality, doorways, and passages. As such, Janus is depicted as on your bulletin cover with faces going each way, back to back, in opposite directions, one looking backward, the other forward, and that's what our service is going to do this morning. We're going to look both backward and forward. For the opening words, I'm going to draw on a prayer of the Unitarian minister and author, the Reverend Robert Leavens. He lived from 1878 to 1961. These words, holy and beautiful the custom, which brings us together in the presence of the Most High, to face our ideals, to remember our loved ones in absence, to give thanks, to make confession, to offer forgiveness, to be enlightened, and to be strengthened. Through this quiet hour breathes the worship of ages, the cathedral music of history. Three unseen guests attend, faith, hope, and love. Let all our hearts prepare them place. Audrey? Thank you.
As some of you might know, my relationship with my parents is difficult, especially my father. It seems to me that the problem began when he started getting most of his news from a source that I don't find trustworthy. First, he consumed it, and then it consumed him. The last time we visited my parents, from the moment we walked in the door, my father wanted to discuss only politics, and he was hostile. This past week, I heard a story about my 18-year-old father from the year 1967, when he was still in high school. At the time, my 17-year-old mother was, how should I say this? My 17-year-old mother had a Joey in the pouch, a bun in the oven. She was knocked up. And the two of them had secretly married in March, 3 months before graduation. Now, before any of you express shock, I'd like to remind you that I am a certified OWL facilitator, and I know the appropriate uses of pregnancy slang. So, anyway, my mother was on the nest with my sister, and towards the end of that school year, my father asked a friend who was taking Latin, "How do you say I love you in Latin?" I find this story just incredibly sweet. Of course, I know lots of other stories about my father, like how in 1974 he spent 4 months away from our family in Prudhoe Bay, Alaska, working. Or how in 1982 he was laid off and subsequently was out of work for 2.5 years. Or the heart surgery in 1996, after which he was more religious than I had ever known him to be. Honestly, I have trouble reconciling all these stories with the more recent one, the one where he's openly hostile. I am reminded of a couple of lines from a Walt Whitman poem, Song of Myself. Do I contradict myself? Very well, I contradict myself. I am large, I contain multitudes. My father, he contains multitudes. Perhaps this is a reason why knowing the past can sometimes provide so little information on how to navigate the future. I dedicate the lighting of our flaming chalice to going forward and acknowledging the next song. Please join with me in repeating our affirmation as printed in your order of service. As we come together to worship, remind ourselves to treat all people kindly, because we are one family, to take good care of the earth, because it is our home, and to live lives full of love and goodness, because that is how we will all become the best that we can be.
I invite you to stand as you are able, and sing number 55, our opening hymn, number 55. And I've asked Audrey to play it over once before we sing it, because it's probably not familiar. Thank you.
On many Sundays, we set aside some time for the sharing of joys and sorrows. If you have a joy or a sorrow that you would like to share, please come forward, state your name, and in a few brief sentences, share your joy or sorrow. Pour a little water in the bowl so that we may all be buoyed up by joy, or place a stone in the bowl so that we may all share your burden for a sorrow. As a reminder, this part of the service is not recorded. I pour a little more water in the bowl and place a final stone for all of the joys and sorrows that remain unspoken, held delicately in our hearts. I am going to share a little secret with you. When my eyes are weary and my heart aches with sorrow, it is not the darkness of winter that comforts and caresses me. It is cedars that comforts and caresses me, where I can be surrounded by quiet calm and my soul sings. And this is why I think it's important that we support cedars generously. If you are visiting for the first time, feel free to let the baskets pass you by. You are our guest, and we are happy simply that you are with us today. Would the ushers come forward to collect the offering? Thank you for your generous gifts.
Too much coffee this morning. My reading on this first Sunday of January 25, 2025, consists of excerpts from a New Year's essay by Michael Mead. Michael Mead heads the Mosaic Multicultural Foundation on Vashon Island, where Michael has lived for many years. Some of you may know of him. He works in the area of mythology and depth psychology, investigating the eternal vertical dimension of our lives that provides an anchor beneath the ever-changing horizontal time dimension of our lives. When I was a minister in Port Townsend at the Quimper Unitarian Fellowship, on several occasions I worked with Michael Mead. He led a number of workshops there in our sanctuary. And then also when he was there, I would invite him to present the service for the Sunday service for those occasions. And at that time, the congregation had two services which were supposed to be identical. Michael Mead, who, as I said, worked on the eternal, unchanging dimension of reality, was, it seems, congenitally unable to do the same thing twice. And so he would see something would happen in the first service And that now became the basis of his message in the second service. Off he would go. So he is an amazing talent. And at any rate, I'm on his email list, and every year he gives a New Year's greeting. I'm going to read the first half of what that reading was. I just received it a few days ago. It's titled, Finding Ways to Begin Anew. Although there can be no quick fix for all the troubles, that troubles the world at this time, the aim of traditional New Year rites was to end the reign of the old year in order to begin everything anew. The idea was to follow the course of nature, in which the world descends into darkness before the light and the energy of life begins to return. The old idea was not simply the turning over of a calendar, but the understanding that a capacity for transformation and regeneration resides at the heart of nature, at the center of the cosmos, and in the heart of humanity as well. The point was not to be naive and deny problems that must be faced, but to return to the origins of creation and symbolically participate in the capacity of life to renew itself. For small and insignificant as we may increasingly feel, we carry within our souls a spark that is connected to the galaxies and to the origins of creation. On one hand, we are time-bound. On the other, we are secretly tied to eternal things that transcend the limits of time and place. By symbolically participating in the dissolution of time, ancient people were temporarily delivered from their faults and failings and had their original life potentials restored. Although this primordial sense of rejuvenation and renewal does not remove suffering or injustice from the world, it becomes more important if we are to avoid overwhelm and navigate the chaotic and exhausting times in which we live. We live amidst a shattering of paradigms that radically alter familiar patterns in both nature and culture. As the future of the earth itself becomes increasingly uncertain, the search for genuine knowledge begins with accepting the sense that we truly do not know what the new year might bring. To find the kinds of insight and wisdom we most need, we must accept the condition of not knowing that parallels the uncertainty and darkness that appear before creation occurs. Inside all stuck situations, there is a deep vulnerability that can lead to a release of unexpected imagination and inspired ideas. In Zen Buddhist traditions, the practice of Shoshin translates as beginner's mind. Shoshin begins where received ideas and accepted patterns are left behind, as an innate capacity to awaken from within begins with not knowing. The open and humble attitude of a beginner makes us less likely to repeat old patterns of behavior. I'm going to stop here, but I will include his entire essay in a print version of the service that I will send out, which you're welcome to use. And so now we will go to our centering hymn. It's the Ceaseless Flow of Endless Time. Did you want to say a word about that, Alan? And then and Audrey will play it again.
Number 350, and I invite you to stand once again. Audrey will play it through one time so we can get a sense of the melody. Thank you.
At the turning of this new year on this first Sunday in January, I'm going to use a poem as the text for my sermon message. It's a poem that Janus-like looks both backward and forward upon what is now, it looks backward first at the old year, what was in the past, and then looks forward to what we can take with us from the past into the new year and the future. The poem comes from the hand of the poet Denis Levertov, who lived from 1923 to 1997. She grew up in England, but spent most of her life here in the United States, and her last 8 years were spent in Seattle. She lived near Seward Park on Lake Washington with, quote, a view of her beloved Mount Rainier. She is buried at the Lakeview Cemetery directly east, I'm pointing east, right, of here, across the Sound in Seattle. And the poem, which you'll find printed in your order of service, so you may want to take a look at that. It's titled Once Only. I'm going to read it, however, twice, because poems are sometimes difficult to take in at a first reading, and you can follow along if you wish as I read it. Once Only by Denis Levertov. All which, because it was flame and song and granted us joy, we thought we'd do, be, revisit, turns out to have been what it was that once only. Every invitation did not begin a series, a build-up. The marvelous did happen in our lives. Our stories are not drab with its absence. But don't expect to return for more. Whatever more there will be unique, as those were unique. Try to acknowledge the next song in its body halo of flames as utterly present as now or never. And again, all which because it was flame and song and granted us joy, we thought we'd do, be, revisit, turns out to have been what it was that once only. Every invitation did not begin a series, a build-up. The marvelous did happen in our lives. Our stories are not drab with its absence. But don't expect to return for more. Whatever more there will be unique as those were unique. Try to acknowledge the next song in its body halo of flames as utterly present as now or never. Well, in this poem, Denis Levertov seems to me to have perfectly hunted down in words a common misconception that undermines our well-being and happiness. The experiences the poet is talking about in this poem are very positive experiences, marvelous experiences, as she says, experiences that have delighted us, surprised us, moved us, lifted us up, illuminated us, filled us with joy and beatitude. Ironically, however, the way we take in these experiences and the expectations we develop around them thwart us and block us from having these experiences again. Our tendency, says the poet, is to believe that a very positive and beautiful experience in our lives is now the base from which similar or even more glorious experiences will arise. We tend, says the poet, to take these experiences as the first in a series that will continue upward and onward, or if not always upward and onward, at least experiences or a state of being that we can return to, have again, or revisit. And here, says the poet, is where the problem lies, because, sorry, that's not the way life is. These marvelous experiences, these illuminations, these ecstasies, these glories, these beatitudes are what they are. They are not twice or thrice or ever again. They are once only. They belong to their time and place and cannot be carried forward or transferred to another address. Can you think of times in your own life where everything seemed to be clicking and you had something going on that was delightful, precious, and beautiful? Perhaps a circle of friends, a family life, a career situation. And there seemed no reason for this to end, but it did end. Friends moved away, separations took place, children grew up, made their own lives. Your career path took a very different turn. Age came upon you. Illnesses occurred. Injuries befell you. Local, regional, national, world events took an unforeseen turn. Looking back, you see perhaps that you didn't really appreciate what you had at the time, and largely because you assumed that it could go on and on and on. You took that time for granted. You thought you could live there forever. You thought you could build upon it. You thought that life would always be like that, and perhaps even better. But no, that was the moment. It was that moment. The poet uses an interesting word to describe these glorious experiences of our past. It's the word invitation. The poet doesn't deny that these past experiences are invitational, but she suggests that we misapprehend and misunderstand the nature of the invitation. We tend to think that these past experiences are an invitation to try to repeat or to recapture them, to build upon them, and to consider them as the beginning of a series. But just here, says the poet, is where the error lies. For it's not an invitation to repeat or to recapture the past. Rather, it's an invitation to see that life is always to the moment, that each moment, that each time of life holds its own meaning and value and miracle, if and when one is open to it. So, the invitation is this. If you have once experienced that life and being as flame and song, then you know that life and being is capable of being miraculous. You know that the glory is here. And our task then, says the poet, is to try to acknowledge the next song in its body flame, body halo of flames. What a phrase that is, body halo of flames. It brings to my mind the story in the Hebrew Scriptures from the third chapter of the book of Exodus, in which Moses comes across a bush in the desert engulfed in flames, and yet the bush is not consumed. Puzzled by this strange sight, Moses goes to investigate and discovers that he is standing upon holy ground. Why? Because the flame he has stumbled upon is not an ordinary flame. It does not strictly belong to time and space. Moses finds that he is in the presence of a power that he did not create and cannot control. Moses is instructed to take off his shoes. I can't help but wonder if Denise Levertov, whose father's background was that of a Russian Hasidic Jew, whether she also had the story of Moses and the burning bush in her mind when she wrote her poem and used the words flame and flames in it. Whether or not that is the case, in that story and in that place, Moses came across an ordinary desert bush in its body halo of flames. In other words, Moses beheld the unoriginated flame that is both prior to and posterior to time and space. Moses beheld the transcendent flame that is greater than all material reality and yet present in each particle of material reality. Moses beheld the infinite flame that is ablaze in everything every day. And Moses beheld the eternal flame that is always burning, that never diminishes, that is never extinguished. In that desert place, the film was lifted from Moses' eyes, and he beheld ordinary reality in its body halo of flames. To see a world in a grain of sand, and heaven in a wild flower. Hold infinity in the palm of your hand, and eternity in an hour. That's how English poet William Blake describes seeing ordinary things in their body halo of flames. So the fault in missing the miracle in life and being is not in the product. The fault is in our vision, in our approach to life and being. We tend to think that we can control things. We tend to think that we are the creators of the flame and song. But no, says the poet, you can't capture that flame and song. You didn't create it, and you can't buy it. As a matter of fact, the more you seek the magic, the further it recedes from you. The more you insist on its presence, the greater grows its absence. The flame and song is there, it's true. But you can't force the magic to appear. It's once only. Here and now, this moment, this place, this confluence of events. Thus, the invitation is an invitation to the ego part of our being, of our psyche, to stop in our tracks, to surrender, and like Moses before the burning bush, to take off our shoes and behold the glory. The ego part of us, which may be called the organ of conscious awareness, that's a term from Robert Johnson, the ego part of us, which may be called the organ of self-conscious awareness, does not create, and it cannot ultimately control. Its main role is to become aware, to focus attention, to recognize, to acknowledge, and to praise. Its main role is to wake up and to let be what will be. The poet says that whatever future marvelous experiences and stories there will be for us, they will be unique as those past stories and experiences were unique. And certainly the poet must here be playing off a song that was popular in the time of the poet's life in the mid-50s. It was a song sung by Doris Day that many of you, many of us will remember. The song, Que Sera, Sera, whatever will be, will be. Doris Day is not here today to sing this song. Fortunately, however, my wife Flossie has agreed to lead us in singing this song and inviting you to join her in the chorus. She will be accompanied by Audrey Blair.
And I hope you do join me on the chorus. Are you ready, Audrey? When I was just a little girl, I asked my mother, what will I be? Will I be pretty? Will I be rich? Here's what she said to me. Que sera, sera. Whatever will be. The future's not ours to see. Que sera, sera. When I grew up and fell in love, I asked my sweetheart what lies ahead. Will it be rainbows day after day? Here's what my sweetheart said. Que sera, sera. Whatever will be. The future's not ours to see. Que sera, sera. Now I have children of my own. They ask their mother, what will I be? Will I be handsome? Will I be rich? I tell them tenderly. Que sera, sera. Whatever will be. The future's not ours to see. Que sera, sera. Que sera, sera. That's the end. Yes, that's the end, Audrey. No.
Says the poet, whatever more there will be unique as those were unique. And so the poet does indeed seem to have faith that the future has more marvels in store for us, that the creative power of life and being is not dimmed or diminished. And our task, as she says in concluding the poem, is to try to acknowledge the next song in its body halo of flames as utterly present as now or never. And again, the poet is clearly playing off another song that was popular in the time of the poet, a number one hit single, 1960, sung by Elvis Presley, titled It's Now or Never.
Or never, come hold me tight, kiss me, my darling, be mine tonight. Tomorrow will be too late, it's now or never, my love won't wait.
So the magic is here awaiting us if we are in a position to engage it, to behold it, to grasp it, if we have eyes to see and ears to hear. But before we can get there, we must acknowledge the once-only nature of things, which is, I think, one of the very hardest tasks we have in life. It's the task of letting go of expectations. And it's a task that I think especially shows up in the glorious Christmas season that is now rapidly receding from us. That is a season that has so many expectations connected to it, so that one tries to set the conditions just right, works like the devil to make it just so. And meanwhile, our young children and cats enjoy playing with the boxes that the presents have come in. Now, I don't think that letting go of expectations means that you don't have traditions and rituals that you repeat. And it doesn't mean that you have no form or structure in your life. And it doesn't mean that you don't return to places that have been beautiful and meaningful to you. It doesn't mean that you don't see movies that you have seen before or read books that you've read before or listen to songs from the past that you have previously enjoyed. And it doesn't mean that you don't make commitments in life and keep them. But it does mean, I think, that you make an attempt to approach these things in humility and wonder and openness. And that, as the poet says, you try to acknowledge the next song in its body halo of flames as utterly present as now or never. To be present to the present doesn't mean that you don't carry commitments with you that are related to your past life. It does mean that you have to try to let go of expectations from the past so that you can be committed to the present. So that's the first thing we need to do in greeting this new year that is just upon us, before us. We sacrifice the glories and beauties of the past so that a new life has place to thrive and grow. Now, I mentioned the name Robert Johnson. He has a definition of sacrifice that I very much like. He says, sacrifice, as Robert Johnson, is the art of drawing energy from your old life so that it can be reinvested into your new life. And so we attempt to clear the ground and create space for the new year. We surrender what has been in the past for the present that is and for the future that will be. Inwardly, we say, que sera, sera. Whatever will be, will be. To assist us in saying goodbye to the old year in the past, to clear ground and create space for the new year, I want to invite you to participate in a little ritual. It was introduced to me by a ministerial colleague, the Reverend Deborah Thorne. She called it a composting communion. It's a ritual in which we symbolically let go of the products and outcomes of this past year's energy so that that energy can be made available to us in the year that is upon us. Deborah Thorne was a ministerial intern with me in Port Townsend in 2012, and this is what she said about the composting communion. A composting communion, she said, is a joining together of our past experiences, a time to put back into the earth our knowledge and experiences so that they may become one again with the earth through the organic, natural process of decomposing and thereby become the source of our wisdom. By doing this in fellowship as a communal experience, we are expressing our understanding of our place in the cycle of life and death and rebirth. We recognize that it is not just our bodies that return to earth to become the source and energy for new life, but also our experiences, all our experiences. We humans, she says, have our own cycles of growth and flourishing and our times of fallow and resting. In this turning of the year, we now recognize that we need, like the earth, to put back what we have accumulated in experience, our joys and sorrows, the highs and lows from the past year. We return to the earth what we have learned, struggled with, triumphed over, and celebrated in this past year. In this giving back, we know that through the organic processes of life, our past experiences will transform into the nourishment, the wisdom, and the inspiration for the new year. Here's the way this little ritual works for those of you who would like to participate. You are invited to take a little piece of paper from a basket that our ushers will pass in a short time. And on this piece of paper, you are invited to write a word or a phrase, and I have pencils and the papers for you, but you are invited to write a word or phrase that is related to some investment of your energy from this past year. So what you write on the paper can be related to the energy that has gone into some activity, some project, or some task from this past year, or from some experience that you have gone through. It can be what you regard as a positive or a negative investment of your energy. Both of them involve our energy. And so it could be a joyous or sorrowful experience. It could be a triumph or a loss. It could be an achievement or a failure. Or again, it could be an investment of energy in a fear, an anxiety, or a longing. It could be an investment in an opinion or an attitude or a certain belief. Whatever you write down, the idea here is to release this energy back to the earth and to the creative powers that be so that it can be recycled and made available for you in the coming year. Then, after you have written your word or phrase on the piece of paper, you're invited to come forward to this composting pot, and I suggest tearing the pieces of paper, and I will mix them into the paper containing your words into that soil, which will be returned to the earth. So, ushers, could you please come forward? And I think there's probably enough pencils and papers to go around. So, so just come forward whenever you've written it, and I will compost it right here. Thank you, Audrey. I did the same ceremony last week on Vashon Island, and there their papers are also in there. So you share something now with your island nearby, okay? Well, we conclude our end of the year ritual with these words from T.S. Eliot. For last year's words belong to last year's language. Next year's words await another voice. And to make an end is to make a beginning. And now, having ritually said goodbye to the old year and having cleared space for the new, let's conclude our service by turning toward that new year. There's a responsive reading that I've written that's in your order of service. And would you please join with me in this responsive reading? On this Sunday near the beginning of the new calendar year, we gather in our sanctuary to prepare our hearts and minds for the year before us. There may be challenges we have never had to face before. There may be kindnesses we have never received before. What lies ahead of us in this coming year belongs to the unknown. And now, with anticipation and wonder, fear and humility, once more we stand before the unknown, seeking again to find our way. We depend upon resources from hidden springs to arouse and sustain us. We walk together into this new year, strengthening, supporting, encouraging, and caring for each other. Our closing hymn, which Alan will introduce, is We Would Be One.
I invite you to stand. Number 318. And this one we know.
Please repeat after me as I extinguish our flaming chalice. We extinguish this flame, but not the light of truth.
We extinguish this flame, but not the light of truth.
The warmth of community or the fire of commitment.
The warmth of community or the fire of commitment.
These we carry in our hearts until we are together again.
Our closing words of benediction as we engage the new year from the Reverend Gary Kowalski. Go in peace, speak the truth, Give thanks each day. Respect the earth and her creatures, for they are alive like you. Care for your body. It is a wondrous gift. Live simply. Be of service. Be guided by your faith and not your fear. Go lightly on your path. Walk in a sacred manner. Amen. So may it be.